Well, hello there, and welcome to Relationship Revelations. I'm Sheila Grace Harvey, and today I have a wonderful guest with me, Jesu Garcia, and I'd just like to give you a little bit of background on him. He was born in New York City. He was raised by Cuban-born parents who had fled their country for the promise of a better life in the U.S. Growing up on the streets of Newark, New Jersey, Jesu had to deal with a neighborhood of toughs. He became aware of his acting talents when a bully intended to mug him and steal his bicycle, and the six-year-old Jesu broke into crocodile tears and so disheartened his assailant that he allowed Jesu to leave unharmed and with his bike. "It was then I knew I could act," he remembers. Well, he's come a long way since then, and taking what he's learned from some of Hollywood's greatest actors and directors, he's joined with good friend and New York Times number one best-selling author, Dr. John Roger, to create their first full-length feature, Spiritual Warriors. It's inspired by Dr. John Roger's best-selling book, Spiritual Warrior, and together they co-wrote and executive produced Spiritual Warriors, the movie, and Jesu starred in it. So welcome, Jesu Garcia.
Thank you. Sheila, great party.
Yes. Well, lovely to have you here. And before I get into talking a little bit about the movie, when you were six, you realized you could act. But when did you decide you really wanted to act?
Well, I always wanted to be like a star since then. You know, Dean Martin was a big star then.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to watch his movies. I pretended to be Dean Martin with all these women. He used to do these spy movies called Matt Helm movies. And so, since then, I just didn't know how to do it. I just knew I wanted to, so I was always dancing, singing, acting like a clown to my parents and friends. And then it really happened during my teenage years when I ran into somebody who I said I wanted to be a star, and he wanted to help me out. And so I met the right person. I got lucky. I met one person, and that person was the one that happened to be, at the time, Richard Gere's agent, Mel Gibson, and Michelle Pfeiffer's.
Wow.
Then I went to acting classes. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's your intention. What you put in, what you put out, you can manifest if you keep, you know, keep focused on it.
That's absolutely correct. And you basically auditioned, got your first break on Fame on television. And I just want to give people a little bit of background. You've been in feature films like Traffic, Slaves of New York, We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson, Collateral Damage with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you've been on numerous TV shows like JAG, Murder One, Without a Trace. And having parents and family coming from Cuba, you were starring in The Che Guevara in Andy Garcia's Cuban story, The Lost City.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it just was very interesting because my whole life, our enemy was Fidel Castro and Che Guevara. And then throughout my life, I was reading about them, and then I got obsessed about Che. And then as an actor, I was what ultimate role to play, but to play that guy, you know, the ultimate seducer, villain, hero. And so Andy, I have been a fan of Andy's, and one day after 17 years I've been following, he gets funding for his movie The Lost City. And I wasn't the first one on the list. I was like the last, and I wasn't even considered. A lot of people were up for it. And I auditioned for one role. I didn't get it. And Benjamin Bratt was supposed to do the Che Guevara role. And you guys know Benjamin Bratt, right?
Yes.
And then Benjamin decided to not do it. And the slot was open. And Andy asked me to audition again. And then I got it. I beat out, like, tons of actors. And that was the ultimate. You know, I would like to have a couple more of those in my career that you know, you want the ultimate role. And he praised me, and he worked with me, supported me, and gave me, like, the best role any actor, at least Latin actor, could want, you know. That's, you know, everybody wants to play Hitler. Everybody wants to play you know, bad people that are well known.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And most, you know, Hannibal Lecter, Anthony Hopkins got Oscars because of that. You know, it's how you do it, and you know, it gets. Those are the most interesting characters. They're more in depth. And then I did Along Came Polly with Ben Stiller. And then that's how Spiritual Warriors came about. It, all those movies gave me sort of the know-how, the courage. I think I can make a movie. And I always wanted to work with John Rogers, so.
Right. Well, one of the things that I love to ask people, because I talk a lot about John Roger and the movement of spiritual inner awareness and how he is my spiritual teacher. How and when did you meet him?
Well, it was 1986. Just a long story short, I basically was dating a couple girls, one girl here, one girl there, and I'd been involved in drugs, and he created a thing called Insight, which I didn't put the two things together. It's kind of like an S type of 5-day seminar with a lot of heartfelt and basically 5 days of a love fest, getting down to who you are. And I met this girl, and she gave me all these little books, and these little books were John Roger books. And as I went away to work on a film, I started to read on these books, and I started to really get hooked on them. I knew that this is a guy and the teachings I've been wanting for I don't know how long. I don't know where this urge came. But instantly, when I got back, not only did I get married with a girl, but I got into the movement of spiritual inner awareness. And then when we were breaking up, me and my ex-wife, we were having problems. John Roger had a seminar, which was a sort of a seminar, is like a 2-3-day seminar class or course on something, and he held it at the Universal Amphitheater, and it was called Relationship Seminars, and I needed to take it, plus he had a book called Relationships, and I went, joined up, and took the seminar, and I got to share with him, and I was up in the front row, and I was like, you know, and he called my name, and he knew my name. He knew my acting name, and spirit, and he had seen me in other films a long time ago, and I said I wanted to work with him, and he said, well, we'll see. And then after that, I joined up to do one of his trips. They were called PAT trainings, PAT 4 trainings, Peace. Mm-hmm. Peace Awareness trainings, which are, it's basically 150 people travel to the Middle East, Egypt, and Israel for 3 to 4 weeks. And you go down the Nile, you meditate, you do, you know, I'm sure you've done them. And,
Actually, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, I thought maybe you
no.
were. And it's one of the most spectacular, I'm just glad I did them in my life. They were, it's just something that are out of this world. There's a book that he would have you read called Hermann Hesse's Journey to the East, and it was very similar to those experiences. And you know, you really get biblical. You really, all the great prophets that walked in that time period. You're now walking in your time period. You know, smelling the same air, walking the same land, experiencing similar things. And in 19 I ended up working with him. You know, I ended up taking care of him, and we worked together. I'm one of his staff, and I also do acting. And we decided to write a script, and it has a lot of the experiences that we did in PAT 4 in the Middle East with all those people, and we integrated into the movie, and the movie became Spiritual Warriors, which is like a it's basically 99 minutes of a relationship between a student and a master. But that's how I met him, and once I met him, I was hooked. It's like a deja vu reincarnation feeling of, you know, I've known this guy, we're friends. He's like, if I could meet him, I know we could be friends. And sure enough, we were. We still are.
So what exactly happened in terms of deciding to do the script or do the movie? Was there anything specific? Was it the trips? What was it that decided you to actually sit down and do this?
Well, we read a book called 21 Days of How to Write a Script in 21 Days. And,
okay.
You know, and I was like, I had written two before, and we hadn't really done anything with those. We did a short film out of one of them called My Little Havana. And then I was like, I had seen movies like the Passion of the Christ. I saw What the Bleep. And I saw Matrix. And I started to think, and I came to John Roger, why don't we do a movie? And, can I write it with you? Can we do it? So we worked together. And we started to, I wanted to star in it. So then I put myself in it. Mm-hmm. And with an elder teacher, him. But he didn't want to act in it, so then we cast an older fella called Robert Easton. And it would be a sort of a parallel kind of journey. But we wanted to make it, kind of a archetype where everyone is that character, me. Everyone is that young Luke Skywalker that wants, to travel outside the universe, that wants to know more. And the teacher is Robert Easton. And we decided to go to the countries. So we went to Egypt, Jordan, and Syria and filmed in those countries. We decided to really bring an epic feel to the movie. And if you see the movie, it really feels like you're going on a journey. It starts in California, in some guy's backyard, and then boom, you're on top of the pyramids. Mm-hmm. And it was a great film. It's a great story, actually, the way we did it.
Yes, it is a great story. And just for those who haven't seen it, do you want to just give a little bit of an idea about the young man Finn, which is the part that you play, who meets his guru, which is Roger? Would you just like to sort of give a little bit of an overview about what the movie's about?
Yeah, the movie's about a young, troubled actor, kind of like me, who did some drugs. A little bit like me. But in this, we decided that he deals with this mafia character. And on the run from the cops, he hides in a mysterious house on the porch. In the morning, the cops are gone, and this old man finds him and begins by introducing himself and saying, "I've been waiting for you." And the kid's like, "You're crazy." And he says, "Listen, let's play some cards. Would you like some tea?" And the young man wants to hide, so sure. And in the playing of the cards, the young man starts to see his other lifetimes. And he's taken through the cards, sort of hypnotic field energy into other lifetimes. And it scares the kid. He runs away. The old man says, "Come back." The next day, he's had terrible dreams. The kid comes back. The old man says, "Great, and we're going to leave to Egypt. You're the one, and you're going to be, and I'm going to train you for your initiation." And the kid's like, "You're crazy." And then on they go on to their journey, and the journey of unfolding, and the young man starts to find out more and more who he really is and who the old man is. Ultimately, in the end, you see what his journey and his final confrontation with his negative self and what happens after that,
Yes. J.R. often said it takes courage to face your fears. And out of the book, The Spiritual Worry, he says, "The most difficult thing about being a spiritual warrior is confronting yourself. It is in those moments when you are free from the distractions of the physical world that you have the greatest chance for upliftment. Take every chance you get, because you will live in this world, get married, have kids, spend your life in slavery to car payments and house payments, work 8 hours a day and die, and you can take none of that with you."
Amen.
And a lot about the movie really is about loving the key, isn't it?
Yeah, and I really wanted to do something. I've always wanted to do something for JR, and making this movie was you know, a really nice love letter to him about what he's done, and a thank you. And, you know, the film's done a lot of great help towards a lot of people. I mean, we've traveled, you know, in 1 year we went to South America and Europe, East Coast, and the year before we traveled all over South America, and we opened in different film festivals. So the film is, you know, economically it doesn't make sense, but because we haven't made our money back, and but the film spiritually it really hits people. You know, you wonder why I'm going to do another screening, and then I wonder, and then after people sit, watch the movie, and during, and my favorite parts are the Q&As, and it becomes a seminar. People start sharing what they got out of the movie. You know, they've been waiting a long time. A lot of people, one lady wasn't really quite sure about her life, and she lived in France. She saw the movie in France, and then she wrote how much the movie was so honest for her, even though she didn't think it was a very professional movie. You know, we're not like Spielberg. Mm-hmm. But she was completely knocked out. So she left Paris, moved to the United States, and she's following her dream. And she stays in contact and writes about how wonderful that moment was, where she just, it was a big moment of clarity for her. And the movie does that. It'll, you know, you'll totally hate it and leave. And that means you got something to work on, because it totally pushes your buttons. And other times people just, you know, they've been wanting that. It was a big moment of nurturing that they got, you know, and they really loved it.
The thing I find interesting, because I've seen it 4 times now, and it's just the different things that each time, and it also depends on what kind of a mood I'm in when I'm watching it and what kind of a space I'm in. I notice that it can be completely different each time. So it's one of those movies that has a lot of different layers to it. So I guess a lot really depends on, you know, where we are in our progression and just what's happening to us that day, really.
Exactly. And Rick Ojeda, the producer, says, you know, you got to watch it. Every time you watch it, some people have watched it 11 times. I think I've watched it over 1,000. You know, it's like the more you watch it, the more things change inside of you, and you get more out of it, you know.
Very much so. Well, obviously, when you're making a movie like this, and how long did it take from the concept of putting a script together to actually getting the film completed?
I did it, and we wrote in 99, so it's now 98. I'd say 8 years. I mean, it was finished in, we finished shooting it in 2004, so 4 years. But then it took 2 years after that to finish it, 6 years, and then 2 years to promote it. But that's just us, you know. Ours also was actually faster, because we weren't looking for money. We had money. So we got a couple friends together. They paid for it, and we did it. Now, most movies, it will probably take you as long as it would take you to raise the money.
That's right.
And what was wonderful about having the money was, you know, it was green light. You know, it was time to do it. It wasn't a joke anymore, you know. You wait your whole life to do a movie, and then it's green light. It's time for you to do it, and you're a little bit panicked because you don't want to blow it. This is the one time. You know, you try to do the best.
Yes.
And it doesn't always work, but not everything in Spiritual Warriors is perfect. But there are lots of things in it that are, that, you know, you're pretty blown away that really came out in good quality.
Well, I guess one of the things John Roger talks about is the three directives of the spiritual warrior. The first is intention, which is the direction we wish our spirit to travel. The second is impeccability, using energy wisely and purposefully, conserving and directing it to form alignment with spirit. From spiritual alignment emerges clarity about eternal reality, freedom from the binding nature of what we know as the physical or material world, and ruthlessness, the sword of truth, which cuts away that which is unnecessary and no longer useful. So I guess you, when you do a movie about spiritual warrior, you get to be tested.
A lot. I mean, the biggest tests were during the filming of the movie. Between me and the director, and between, you know, what was strong inside of me, what is my my truth. And I knew something that I wanted, and I wanted to, I saw it in spirit. And it's hard to translate it to the people that are fighting against you. You know, people are hungry, people are tired, and then it really is about how I was going to collapse inside of myself, or was I going to make it happen, you know? Was I going to fight for inside of me for my truth, and my truth was what I thought was right. And it wasn't about I had to eat. It was about a certain shot that we had to film while we were there. And the thing that irked me the most is if you fly thousands of miles, you know, to film and film great locations where they shot Lawrence of Arabia and, you know, where they did many biblical movies and many, you know, movies in those areas. And then all you're concerned about is, you know, eating, and all you're concerned about is, you know, those kinds of things, then I'm not going to enjoy that, because we're here to make a movie. So you somehow get into a point of, okay, we'll eat later, but right now this is important to get the shot. And I know I'm tired, and we're going to push it, and we're going to go. I mean, we had to go into a desert location in Wadi Rum, which was in Lawrence of Arabia, which was basically miles and miles of desert with no road. And it's hot, you know, but the sun was setting, and when the sun was setting on those dunes, really something majestical was happening. And I just didn't want someone ruining that. And I remember my conversation with JR inside, which was, you know, how was it? How did it go? Oh, you know, I got what I wanted. Did you? Well, not really. We were in the desert. People wanted to get out, and so I gave in, and we didn't get the shot I wanted. Oh, well, then that's your fault. That's your responsibility. You know, and then I said, stop the cars. All right, cameras out. Let's film this. And it almost started a mutiny on the set. And we got the shot. You know, months later, we're back home, and we're looking at what we shot. And it was, you know, genius, all the stuff that we captured, you know, and your body and, you know, your mind and things are just getting tired. But, you know, in the end, it was so worth it because, you know, this movie's out. It really is a journey, and it was a greater journey making the movie than it was, in the movie and what it's done on the outside. What it's done for me out, you know, behind the scenes was more powerful to me than the actual movie, in the making of the movie, you know, the behind the scenes. And the people that you had to fire and the choices that you had to make you know, it's kind of like, I've never been the president, but it would be sort of like you're the head of something, you're the responsible for people, and there's a mission, you know, and the mission is to complete it and come home. And if anybody gets in the way of that, it's like a cancer, you know. Do you put up with it and let them poison the rest of the scene, the rest of the people, or do you get rid of it, you know, and then you cut it, get rid of it. You know, and it doesn't mean that you're not careful and that you don't love your fellow human, but You know, sometimes you have to do what's right to survive for you, your family, and your friends.
Well, there's a little section in there about petty tyrants. And I think J.R.'s always said the kind of functions to challenge our self-importance. And, you know, we all at some point have petty tyrants in our life who seem to be those people who push our little buttons and weak spots. And I suppose that that on some level was at times your function on the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to, the petty tyrant is, could be you, could be us, mm-hmm. or it could be that other person. And then you, that's what I mean by the cancer, is that the petty tyrant, you have to realize that, you know, some guys or some woman is running your corporation, your store, your family, and they're like a petty tyrant, and, you know, you don't want to deal with it. Sometimes you have to. You do it by loving, and you do it by getting them out of that position. You know, you put them there, or there's a reason for you to learn why there, you know, why there needs to be a petty tyrant there. But I think it's all a learning process, you know, to definitely to name it, to acknowledge it, to accept it, and then do something about it. Makes you stronger so that you don't give in. It's when you give in and give up that, you know, you're actually, you put yourself in a victim consciousness rather than a proactive consciousness that says, get out of my house, you know?
Well, it's that ruthlessness, isn't it?
Yeah. It's ruthless, and it's the application of it. You know, you can either blow up, get really negative and angry, or you can do a really, you know, very nice. You know, I need you to leave my house. In the case right now, you know, there's a situation in my family, and my brother is not necessarily a nice guy, and he's dealt and he's been involved in drugs, and he just shows up. Like, I'm supposed to, like, meet him. And the ruthlessness is I'm not meeting him. I'm not going to give him anything, nothing. You know, it's all about, I want to take care of myself and I want to take care of my friends, and I don't need that energy around me.
And that's really loving yourself, which is really important, isn't
it? Yeah, I care about myself. I don't want to put myself in that position. And I don't care if my mom forces me to, or sometimes family is like the worst. Because somehow, you know, you get thrown the guilt that I have to do this for my brother. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do anything for anybody except love myself and take care of myself, take care of my friends.
Well, it's always those closest to us that challenge us the most often. But, you know, when we talk about ruthlessness or we talk about spiritual warrior, a lot of people think of warrior and ruthlessness as a kind of like negative, combative type of things, but it really isn't when we're talking about the spiritual warrior, because we're really looking at the positive qualities, like a warrior's, you know, dedication and commitment and focus, which is really what you've needed to do in order to be able to make this movie.
Right.
So it's, so I guess it really is about the loving and taking care of ourselves. And what I'm hearing from you is staying true to your vision of what it was that you were putting together.
Right, and we did it all for, you know, J.R., John Roger. I mean, we all cared about having some kind of, like, positive energy involved. Even on the set, there was no smoking allowed. Obviously, nobody did drugs that I knew of. And there was no, you know, kind of like if you didn't have a positive feel in coming into the game or on the set, then we didn't need you, you know. We wanted all to be, you know, let's get this together, you know, like a family unit.
Well, you must have created it quite well, because you had a tremendous number of people who volunteered their time and energy on this movie. People also care about John Roger, and we're happy to be involved on this project. And what I'd love to do is just ask you about some of the making of the movie. One of the stories that I love was about when you went to Big Petra and Little Petra, and you arrived a little later than you anticipated, and you needed to create a village that was about 100 AD, and nothing was prepared at all. You had nothing organized. So could you just talk a little bit about what you did to be able to create that scene?
Sure, that was my favorite. And remember, yes, because of John Roger, I mean, he knows just millions of people, and just thousands love him, and his energy to be put on the movie, there were a lot of miracles that happened, and that was one of them. And I remember we drove in, we had shot, come into Amman, Jordan, and drove all night into Petra. We didn't get in until about 9, 10. And we didn't have anything for tomorrow. Tomorrow, the next day, we were supposed to be shooting in a Petra, which the first Petra, the big Petra, is the one that you've seen in movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's basically a etched in city carved on rock, carved out of rock. Little Petra is a similar city, all by the locally the Amoran tribe today runs it, but the Nabataeans ran it, you know, thousands of years ago, and I had to make it look like thousands of years ago. It can't look like the Amoran tribes today, but maybe the same people, you know, dark Arab, maybe a little bit of a Bedouin looking. Yeah, there were the caravans, you know, whatever. Anyway, I had this picture, but there was nothing but empty rock. and I was eating. We were all tired. People were really sick at this point. They were tired of the dust, the dirt. And I met the two boys. The two boys, we were hired locally, and their father was with us. They were Jordanian. And the two boys are the two little boys that get hanged in the movie, and they're also reincarnations of myself and the other actor. So I tell the man, who's this beautiful older man, and he had his, you know, like the scarf, the scarf around his head, but it was done cool. It was bitching the way he did it. And it wasn't done like regular Arabs. He looked beautiful, and he looked like a prince. And I told him, and I was really bummed out. I go, look, I just need all these things, and I don't know tomorrow. Jesus, do you know anybody? And he goes, yeah, come on in. Get into my car, and I'll show you. We'll go meet the chief. So we go to Little Petra. It's about midnight already. Nobody. It's like late at night. And remember, certain tribes around that area live in caves, and they come out in the dark like sand people, and they signal to each other, and you know, you don't know who the hell's coming out of the dark, and it's this guy who's one Arab guy, and he says, no, the chief is back at his house. So we drive to the chief's house, and it's this beautiful sheik kind of guy. He comes out with an Armani jacket. He has a galabeya, an Armani dirty jacket, combat boots, and a Timex watch. And he has his beautiful red, you know, scarf on his head. And we sit in this kind of like room with no furniture, just pillows. We kneel. He calls in. I have a girl with me called Nadia O'Day. She's an actress in Jordan. And she's my translator. And the old man's my translator, the prince man, and the sheik. And basically the sheik says to my friend, the father of two kids, what is it that you want? So they all look at me, and I say in English, and meanwhile it's being translated in Heshemite or Jordan, or I don't know what dialect they're talking. But I say, look, I need women, men. I need this to look like 2,000 years old. I need sheep, horses, you know, everything. And the sheik says, how many dogs? He pulls out a paper and a pen. He goes, how many sheep do you want? I said, well, 30. He writes down 30. This is all, by the way, in Arab. So the translator is talking to me. He goes, how many horses do you want? Well, tell him I need, you know, 3 horses. Okay, 3 horses? 3 horses, you know? I need, 15 kids. 15 kids. How many? I need, 40. Give me 20 women. 20 women. Give me, 20 guys. 20 men. And he's like, how many old guys do you want? Well, give me like a couple, few old couples. Old couples. He toasts. I drink his tea in that kind of atmosphere. You drink it. You don't ask questions. He brings out his wife. He brings out his daughter. We kiss. And he says, tomorrow at 6 a.m., you will have everything you want. No price was discussed. And I arrive at 6 in the morning. We go to bed. We go to bed that night. At 6 in the morning, 7, we arrive. And, oh, my God, I can't believe you. It's like this man never went to bed. And they don't have phones. So at 7 a.m., all the towns and all the different tribes from all the area in 2-3 mile radius were coming from the mountains. And we had an amazing set. Along with the rocks, which were historical, we had, people that are just perfect, that you could never buy in Hollywood. And the people, the kids, and other people kept coming because the word came out that there's a job. So we had more people come out, so I ended up hiring more than I thought I needed. And old couples that, remember what I paid this sheik, the amount of money, what I paid him, which was like $1,700, you could never, it would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in Hollywood. But $1,700 feeds these people for a couple years. You know what I mean? And it does things that you could never imagine. And I don't know if it's the right word, feudalistic, in terms of there's one leader, one boss, and then he spreads the wealth around. And then, and they respect this man. And there is no rebels and no crazy people. And people supported us, and the father of the 2 kids, he just laughed that morning. And I went off with Nadia, the girl. And that was the first day I felt very relaxed. Rick Ojeda, my producer and the director, shot that scene. I didn't need to be in it. I went to the pool and relaxed with the girl, and we just ate and relaxed. And that was a miracle that I've never, I can't even explain it, except that the Lord God, Christ, and JR, they were there. And they made things happen because there was something happening, and the Spirit said, this is real. Let's bring it in. Not only were we making a movie here, we were also, in a kind of secular kind of thing, in an undercurrent. We were helping them financially, and it wasn't like we were charity. Like, here's some money, eat. We were like, hey, you want to work? I think I can. We can pay you, and. The funny thing about it is at the end of the day when I had to pay, I didn't have any money. And I forgot that it was an Arab holiday. And an Arab holiday, you can't get anything. So I was with a great man called Fadl God, my co-producer. He's the guy that took John Roger to all the tours into Egypt. Fadl God said, don't worry about it. I'll get $1,700 from Amman. So he called a guy in Amman, Jordan, which was about 3 hours away, 3-4 hours away, to get $1,700 and drive it in a private car to us in Little Petra to pay the Arab guy because the sheik. I didn't want to have these guys. And everything over there, by the way, much different than any other country. The Jordanians are all about shaking hands. You shake hands, you make a deal, you got to come through. And the mentality there is an amazing mentality, more than I've ever seen. It's such a contract when you kiss, you kiss on both sides of the cheek and then you shake hands. And that's, it's an honorable thing, and it's something honor honorable, and honor, the essence of honor was in the air. Mm-hmm. And we were there to respect. And the old man, I love this old man, you know, this old man, the sheik was, the sheik and the prince, the father of the two kids. You know, and then I found out that his wife worked for Queen Noor. And JR had sent, John Roger had sent some emails with Ariana's help to Queen Noor, letting them know that we were going to be there. So it seems like we were protected and helped, you know. It's just really something that was very, very instrumental. Like God was instrumental in that scene, you know.
Well, I guess when you have the clear intention and that commitment and you show up, spirit matches it. And it does seem from a lot of the things that I know about the making of the movie and just even watching the movie, to me, divine grace was definitely present. And, I mean, there were places like, I think there was a museum that they allowed you in to film, and they'd never done that before.
Yeah, the Cairo Museum, no one's allowed in there. And, you know, Dr. Zaid Hawass is a friend of Fado Gad, and no one's allowed to film on top of the pyramids, and we got that. And no one's allowed in the Cairo Museum, and we got that. And all this, all of this became true because of John Roger, because he's the one that, you know, planted the seed. All these people respect John Roger, so it's really John Roger, you know, coming out to make a movie. Fado Gad, we hired him, and we had the guns. You have to have, in these Arab countries, pretty much like any other country, you have to have connections. You have to have pull, or you're just down there, you know. There's a bigger, you know, kind of like hierarchy in Egypt, you know. Those that have, those that don't. And that's a sad situation, but it's very real, you know.
And there were often times where you were was quite dangerous, because you obviously at times had sort of a small army of people taking care of you, because there were some revolutionaries there. And it was a time that U.S. had just gone to war with Iraq, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 2004. I think Iraq went into war in 2003 or something, or two. But we were in Syria. We were 500 kilometers from Iraq. Rick Ojeda and I take photos. We took photos from the Syrian side. But Syria was one of my favorite countries, you know. People say it's dangerous there. It's not at all. I think if you're involved in, you know, subversion and things like that, you're going to find trouble. They gave us hotels and all sorts of accommodations to film in Syria for free. And we shot in a beautiful city, a Roman old historical city called Palmyra, which was the ancient Roman city of the East, which was a great woman called Queen Zenoria that came out of that area. But, you know, those places, I love history, so I went there also to see, you know, those areas, you know, great generals and prophets, regular people walked through those, even probably even Christ must have come through there, you know. I was on the way that was the route to Damascus, you know. All those cities, all those countries. Well, we also went to I wanted to treat people to, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans. So we were in an Arab country, do as the Arabs. So we went into Turkish baths in Damascus. And we went into a dinner where they play the whirling dervishes, where the whirling dervishes dance in front of you. So it was a spectacular experience.
Well, one of the things that I think I heard JR say was that a job of a film is to give people the broadest chance to understand themselves in a short time. And of course, when you've only got a movie that's, what did you say, 99 minutes, that's quite an achievement. But I think this film really does that. It talks a lot about reincarnation, and actually it demonstrates it in a very beautiful way. And from his book, he says, it is very important that you understand something. You are here on this planet because you did things incorrectly at some time in your existences. You did not do it the way it was done, and you are back here. And what's more, this may be the last time if you continue on as you are doing, or may not be the last time if you continue on as you are doing. So I think the movie really shows a lot about the coming back lifetime after lifetime and the learning that takes place, and also talk quite a little bit about the shadow side as well, that he says we have to go into the dark part of ourselves and love that dark part, for loving it is the key to the kingdom, and we have to stand up and acknowledge that it is part of us. So we get a wonderful opportunity, I think, through this movie to be able to confront some of the things and some of our dark side and look at the greater picture of the loving, which is really important, and become our own spiritual warrior. And obviously, Jesu, you know, there's so much in this movie, because when I look at where you've screened, now you've screened in over 110 screenings, 43 cities across 16 countries, from LA, New York, London, Paris, Copenhagen, Madrid, Toronto, Caracas, Buenos Aires, Tel Aviv, Cairo, and you've also been officially selected for international film festivals in Toronto, Tel Aviv, Cairo, Cartagena, and Hamburg. So, you know, it's one of those movies that somehow people are inspired to assist you to get this movie out there. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of response you've had as you have been going around the world and showing this movie?
Yeah, we're looking at going to New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah, great.
One day. but the response has been mostly the oneness. Is every country that we've gone to has this level of people, has a kind of people that wants to search for other than what they're getting already in their country. And France is one that's they're going through their little thing where, you know, anything other than their mainstream religions, they punish anyone else that's searching for anything else. And there was a lot of people that came out to watch us in France, and we had a couple government people, but mostly the people, just regular people that, you know, they weren't getting their experiences from their regular religions, and they came out and saw the movie, and they were so thankful, and they were already into that. If they were all, you know, they just, you know, everyone that we went to Denmark, and there was a guy called Jens, and he is just like us, you know. He wanted to bring the movie there, and he got the movie there. He rented the theater himself. He promoted it himself. We had two great screenings, and people came out and were affected by it. People were thankful, and the Danishes are not always that, free with themselves, but they were. They were very, like, you know, just busting out of their bodies, hugging us, and grateful that we came and showed the movie. And South America is a completely other ball game. They're all into it. There is no ands, ifs, or buts in South America. They want it. They're in it. They want so much. They're so hungry, you know. England digs it. England's like, we're there. We're in it. They've already been hungry, and we just, you know, fed them some more movies. You know, the world with movies like The Secret and the What the Bleep has created a target, a market, and those people, they want more of those kinds of products, you know. Spain is also crazy about the movie. And, you know, Egypt was interesting. You know, the Arab people thought, one guy said, this is very genius, it's very dangerous, it's very good, you know, this is the kind of thing we need here. So it ha- has done many things, and then there's people, there were some people that didn't like it, you know, some people that, in each country there was always somebody, and that somebody needed, I think we went to Woodstock, and there was a lady that really, you know, had issues with, you know, why can't this be, why is, there's a problem with duality, a lot of people have problems with, why is there duality in the world? Why is there, you know, good and bad? You know. And I think I heard I was in Santa Fe, not Santa Fe, Sedona, and I heard a guru guy tell me that his teacher said, when they asked him why is there duality, is because God multiplies himself so he can have fun.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you certainly, you know, put yourself on the line to do that. Was it Peru that you went to, and there was kind of not much set up, and you just decided you wanted to show the movie, and amazing things happened to bring
it
together?
I wanted to go to Machu Picchu, period. And nothing was set up, so I flew to Lima and promised to do a spiritual warrior workshop, which we did. It was cool. It was done, like, no money at all, just a PowerPoint on the internet, you know, JR stuff's on the YouTube now. So we played YouTube, did some JR stuff on CDs, did some processes. Then I flew up to, with Ezra Mack, I flew up to Cusco, almost died. It was like, I can't breathe in high elevation. And then I went from Cusco, I went to Machu Picchu. You take the train and you go down. So I spent 3 nights in Machu Picchu to set up a screening. And the base of Machu Picchu is a city called Aguas Calientes. And right there, we screened it to 70 people, 70 tourists and locals. They said it couldn't be done. I did it for free. And, you know, it was the kind of thing, they're very anti-commercial and advertising anything. So we used the cultural center. And we found a projector. We began the screening. We handed out typed Xerox copies of papers that were just printed. No, they didn't like graphics or anything commercial like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go up and down Machu Picchu, which was about 20 minutes to go up on bus and back down, and hit it to all the, you see, it's the crossroads of tourism. So you would hit all sorts of out-of-towners and locals. And there was one minister there, friend of John Roger, called Sulpicio, and he took the train from Cusco to Machu Picchu just for the movie. And he said it changed his life.
Wow.
So, it's like,
well,
you go to the ends of the earth, you know, to...
Well, you certainly have been doing that, and especially as we're coming to the end of our time here, a Spiritual Warrior too.
We're working on it.
Yes?
Yeah, I've been writing it and working with JR slowly.
Well, all the best with that. And thank you for coming on the show today. It's been really fascinating talking to you. And I think you have demonstrated to many of us what it takes sometimes to be a spiritual warrior. So God bless you for that.
And those that want to hear more and be in touch with us, they can go to spiritualwarriors.com and join our news e-letter.
Yeah, that would be great. And it's also on the website on BBS Radio.
Thank you,
all the details for how to do that. Thank you very much, Jesu.
Love you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.